Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. For Iran, the agony seems to be endless. Troops and secret police, apparently still loyal to the Shah, in the southern oil city of Ahvaz this morning opened fire on demonstrators celebrating his departure yesterday. The same thing happened at Arak in the western part of the country. Unconfirmed reports reaching Tehran say many people were killed or wounded. Adding to the misery, the death toll from yesterday's earthquake is now estimated by Iranian newspapers at more than 1,000, with at least another 1,000 injured. More anti-Shah sentiment developed in Tehran this morning, and Mike Lee has an eyewitness report.
Hundreds of demonstrators gathered this morning at the site of the Shah Reza statue in Tehran. The statue itself, a monument to the Shah's father, was torn down yesterday, and in its place is a poster of Muslim leader Ayatollah Khomeini. Khomeini's followers were this morning still celebrating the Shah's departure. The street marches clogged traffic throughout the city. However, the crowds are not as large as yesterday when the Shah departed. Despite reports of trouble between protesters and Iranian soldiers in other cities, the army was virtually nowhere in sight in Tehran. The strike by businesses and shops is still on, and street vendors are the only merchants doing any business. One of the largest businesses is now the selling of Khomeini posters. One of the largest mysteries is how the political crisis will be resolved, through compromise between Khomeini and the government, through more demonstrations, or by a military coup. Mike Lee, CBS News, Tehran.
The Shah, his wife, and a large entourage are now at the Egyptian resort city of Aswan. He met three times there yesterday with President Sadat. He'll see him again tomorrow and will also confer with Gerald Ford. The former president is touring the Middle East with Mrs. Ford. Sometime in the near future, presumably, the Iranian monarch will come to this country, a prospect that CBS News White House correspondent Robert Pierpoint says is viewed in Washington with some concern.
Although several U.S. officials have said the Shah is welcome to come to the United States, his presence here could only add to the problems he has already caused this country. For example, ask if the Secret Service or the State Department would provide security for the Shah. Assistant Secretary Hodding Carter says that as long as he is the chief of state, the Shah would be eligible for the same type of protection as any other visiting constitutional monarch. In other words, the U.S. government may find itself in the awkward position of having to provide permanent bodyguards to protect the Shah from thousands of embittered Iranian students here. That could get messy, not to mention expensive. It could also complicate relations with the new regime in Tehran. Two possibilities present themselves for avoiding all this. The government in Iran could dethrone the Shah and relieve the United States of its responsibilities. Perhaps better yet, the Shah could go to Switzerland. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News, at the White House.
President Carter is certain to be asked about the Shah at this afternoon's news conference, his first since December 12th. It will be broadcast on many of the CBS radio network stations at 4 o'clock Eastern Time. This country's Middle East negotiator, Assistant Secretary of State Alfred Atherton, is in Jerusalem this morning, commencing another effort to get the Israeli-Egyptian peace negotiations back on the track. Dan Revive has the story.
Atherton began his Middle East mission this morning with a two-hour meeting with Israeli legal experts. According to sources, both sides set out their positions on the issues that have delayed the signing of a peace treaty between Israel and Egypt. The issues that Atherton is dealing with are highly technical, but Israeli officials attach symbolic importance to each of them. For instance, Egypt is demanding that the security arrangements in the Sinai, meaning the demilitarized zones, be reviewed in 5 years. Israel is willing to consider a review, but does not want it to be mandatory in 5 years because that might make the peace treaty seem temporary. Egypt also wants to reserve the right to honor its defense treaties with Arab countries. And Atherton and his team are trying to work out a letter of interpretation that both Israel and Egypt can accept. The Israeli plan to build 3 new military farming settlements in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip does not seem to have any effect on the Atherton mission. One participant in this morning's session told CBS News that settlements were not discussed. Dan Revie for CBS News, Jerusalem.
Atherton will go to Egypt this weekend for talks with officials there. The latest case of air piracy ended early today in Beirut. 6 Lebanese Shiite Muslims released more than 80 hostages from a hijacked airliner about 7 hours after capturing it on a flight from Beirut to Amman. The hijackers surrendered after holding a news conference to protest the disappearance of their spiritual leader. He vanished last August during a visit to Libya, and the hijackers accused the Libyan government of kidnapping him. The bribery trial of Pennsylvania's Democratic Representative Daniel Flood in Washington federal court is only in its second day. But already, as we hear from Fred Graham, it has proved to be a bribery trial far out of the ordinary.
Usually, bribery trials of high public officials involve only one event, a single corrupt arrangement. But in only a half day of testimony yesterday, the government's first witness told of three separate groups or individuals who allegedly paid bribes to Flood, and some of them paid in several installments. That witness is Stephen Elko, Flood's former administrative assistant, who will return to the stand today to tell of three other companies who Elko says funneled money to Congressman Flood in exchange for his influence. Another difference is that often all such transactions are handled through middlemen. But in this case, the government will produce four separate individuals who will say they paid bribe money personally to Congressman Flood. All of these witnesses are, of course, convicted felons themselves for their roles in the bribery, and so their testimony is suspect, and Congressman Flood says it never happened. Still, there's probably never before been so much testimony about so much high-level rascality all in one trial. Fred Graham, CBS News, Washington.
More testimony is being heard today in Los Angeles in the case of Marvin versus Marvin, reported now by Miriam Bière.
Former singer Michelle Triola Marvin hopes to prove a non-written contract existed, which actor Lee Marvin violated by not continuing to support her after their breakup. Yesterday, in her opening testimony, the plaintiff outlined much of her story, her earnings in the days before she says she abandoned her career to run the Marvin household, details of a blossoming romance between the pair on the 1964 set of the movie Ship of Fools. Under questioning by her own lawyer, Michelle Triola Marvin may complete her version of that saga today, depicting herself as a woman promised security, although she had no marriage license. But once her attorney's friendly questioning is over, Lee Marvin's lawyer will begin cross-examination, and he's already pointed in opening arguments to the tough stand he intends to take. David Kagan already has described the plaintiff as a woman experienced enough 15 years ago to know a live-in lover was entitled to no division of property, as a woman to whom it was made plain that Lee Marvin wanted no heavy responsibility, a woman to whom Lee Marvin never offered the one insurance of security, marriage. Miriam Bière, CBS News, Los Angeles.
A hearing takes place today in San Francisco in the case of Dan White. He's the former city official accused of killing Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harley Milk in November. The hearing is being held to determine whether White should be bound over to Superior Court for trial on murder charges. At the request of defense attorney Douglas Schmidt, the proceedings will be closed to both the public and the news media. Schmidt says that the media might misrepresent disclosures made during the hearing. More snow fell last night on the snowbound Middle West. It wasn't much. But as Bob Fore reports, even that was too much.
The light dusting of snow which fell on much of the Midwest last night seems mild compared to the deep blanket already on the ground. But even another 1 to 3 inches of new snow will bring more headaches to a region already clobbered by the blizzard of 79. Commuters in hard-hit Chicago, still digging out of almost 3 feet of snow and ice, should fare better today, but not much. Roughly half of the city's rapid transit cars are still immobilized. Rails and side streets are still sheathed in ice. Trains and buses which are moving are jammed, and schedules are just a memory. Today in 4 states, the National Guard will help plow snow, but the Guard has little equipment and progress is slow. Likewise in Chicago, cars buried in snowbanks can't budge until plows arrive, but paradoxically, the plows can't get in until the cars are moved. So while the worst is over and temperatures are climbing, it will be days before the Midwest recovers from what many are now calling the most savage winter storm of the century. Bob Fall, CBS News, Chicago.
Deaths blamed on the storm now number at least 65, and the toll appears certain to rise still further. Fighting is reported still underway in southwestern Cambodia between Vietnamese forces and their communist insurgent allies and troops loyal to the deposed government of Pol Pot. The action centers on Kampong Som.